Blog Talk Radio.
That is some great music. This is Matt Stannard. My colleague Gary Barkley is on the line with me. And if you're not listening to our show, then what you really want to do, or what you really want to look forward to, is Monday, August 22nd, when there will be an interactive call with Kirk Cameron and Ben Carson, sponsored by this organization, My Faith Votes. And I can only imagine the brain trust that that will be. But this is Deflection 2016, sponsored by Shared Sacrifice Media. I'm Matt Stannard, and as I said, my colleague Gary Barkley is hanging in there with me on the other line. Hi, Gary.
Good evening, Matt. I hope hope your week has gone well.
It's been a laugh a minute. That's all I'm going to say about it. But we're very excited to be here for this, you know, semi-serious conversation that we have every Thursday night. Of course, Gary and I for a couple of years did a weekly podcast that was 2 hours long. This is only 30 minutes long, so you only have to listen to us for 30 minutes, whereas I'm not sure how long this interactive call with Kirk Cameron and Ben Carson is going to be on Monday, August 22nd, but I'm telling everyone about it. And in fact, Kirk Cameron, Growing Pains fame, Kirk Cameron.
I was a big fan of his in the 80s.
Who wasn't? Really, who wasn't? he took to Facebook and said, "My friend Dr. Ben Carson and I are going to spend a day together at his house in Florida on Monday. I'm going to suggest a swimming pool cannonball splash contest, a game of horse, and a live, intellectually stimulating, interactive Q&A with us answering your questions from his living room about how together we can help to heal our nation." There is nothing weird about that at all, especially the swimming pool cannonball contest.
And no doubt the whole interview will take place under the mural of Ben Carson with the Klingon Jesus. You ever see that picture?
Yeah, I have. And possibly some pyramids being involved as well. Who knows?
Pyramid green.
One serious thing that we talked about last week was the challenges faced by political parties in the United States who are not the Republican or Democratic parties, and not merely just the size and membership of those parties, but there is a great piece that was released by the Institute for Public Accuracy today featuring some quotes from my friend Sam Husseini, who is the founder of VotePact.org. Now, VotePact is a great idea. In my opinion, it's a great idea because it's a way to build third parties without falling to the charge that you are helping one of the major party candidates or hurting one of the major party candidates. So the way VotePact works is that if you are a right-winger and you're my neighbor and I'm a left-winger, what Sam Husseini suggests is that the two of us get together and bargain and say, well, I will vote for a third-party left-wing candidate if you will vote for a third-party right-wing candidate, and our votes will not cancel each other out, but what they will do is they will aid third parties without giving some kind of phantom advantage to either of the major party candidates. Anyway, so Sam today wrote a piece called "How Presidential Non-Opinion Polls Drive Down Third-Party Numbers and Facilitate Debate Exclusion." And he says, this week, the Bipartisan Commission on Presidential Debates announced what polls it will utilize in excluding candidates from its debates. The CPD says candidates like the Libertarian Party's Gary Johnson and the Green Party's Jill Stein must get 15% in polls conducted by five national public opinion polling organizations, ABC Washington Post, CBS New York Times, CNN Opinion Research Corporation, Fox News, and NBC Wall Street Journal. Sam writes, not only, as several have correctly argued, is the 15% threshold arbitrary and exclusionary, but these polls don't actually ask voters' preferences at all. All they ask is, if the presidential election were being held today, for whom would you vote, or some minor variation of that? Who would you want or prefer? What you would do in the voting booth might be two different things. These public opinion polls don't actually measure opinion. They are non-opinion polls. They ask a false hypothetical regarding a future action. A better public opinion question, he writes, would be, who do you want to be president, or who would you prefer to be president, or who is your first choice to be president? He goes on to say, this is more egregious since the Commission on Presidential Debates has basically asked for the who do you want prefer to be president question to be used when some suggested alternative criteria for inclusion in the presidential debates, like if a majority wanted another candidate to be in the debates. The heads of the CPD rejected the effort. Paul Kirk, then co-chair of the CPD, who's now co-chairman emeritus, and former head of the Democratic National Committee, no coincidence there, says it's a matter of entertainment versus the serious question of who you would prefer to be president of the United States. So the very criteria that they set disregards the serious question of who voters might like to see as president. And I would add, in addition to what Sam says, that that's very important in an election year where a majority of voters would like to see someone else besides the two major party candidates in some sort of predominant position in terms of winning. So I think that Sam does a great job of sort of demonstrating how not only the media, but these non-governmental organizations like the Commission on Presidential Debates are gatekeepers. They're essentially agenda setters, and they get to say who's in and who is out.
Well, that's exactly right. What the Commission for Presidential Debates, or whatever it calls itself, is an actual private corporation that is colluded. You know, obviously the two parties have colluded for decades to keep people out. I mean, ever since I guess the League of Women Voters dropped out of hosting these things, nobody else had. I mean, I think the League of Women Voters even had John Anderson on in the 80s. Debate, but they dropped things out. I mean, Ross Perot somehow got on there, probably just because he was a billionaire, and now.
Well, and I think he was polling fairly high for a while as well. But
yeah, back
that
in
was,
July,
that was
I think
the last
we dropped out.
Seen. Yeah, that I mean that was the last we had seen of Ross Perot in those particular debates. You know, I do think that things are changing, and this year there is a little bit more exposure. CNN gave the Green Party candidates an entire hour yesterday, and it was very well watched. I heard that it was, you know, that it was a very interesting town hall forum for the Green Party candidates, and so I think that's great. I assume they're going to do the same thing for the Libertarian candidates. So in some ways, it may be that the Commission on Presidential Debates proves that it's behind the curve, at least in terms of public opinion.
Well, you know, I was reading, basically an opinion piece. I have no idea where I saw this about it. And there was somebody saying that given where we're at right now with basically people voting, you know, I've noticed just this year that the media is actually mentioning Libertarian and Green now. I don't recall them ever mentioning in standard polls, whenever you see the horse race between the Democrats and Republicans, where you would actually see a third party. In this case, there's two third parties, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, actually showing up on their grids, on their graphs. I haven't seen that before this year. And somebody opined that I was reading that was saying, and it might have been just on social network, Facebook, I don't remember, but this is such a different year than we've ever seen before. This could be
really
a watershed year. It could be a wave election. And it would be very easy for the Democrats if they did take the Senate and possibly even the House, as some people have been speculating now. But it would be very easy for them to misinterpret this and say, hey, people want our brand of corporate cronyism, not the Republican mm-hmm. brand, and end up having it all reversed. But we could be on the cusp of where people say, you know what, a third-party candidate, a Green candidate, Libertarian, what have you, hell, the rent is too high candidate, the rent is too damn high, I think is the name of that party, might end up taking a seat or two in the House or something, by 2020 mm-hmm. or something like that. And
sure.
as soon as that happens, I think my personal belief is as soon as that happens, the Democrats and Republicans, well, what's left of the Republican Party if this turns into a rout this year, we mm-hmm. immediately circle the wagons around each other and say, you know what, this is a truly existential threat to the two-party system, and whatever happens, we need to make sure that we get a coalition of corporatists to run the institution. And that's exactly what I think. If you
yes.
ever saw a critical mass, if you ever saw a critical mass of, say, Greens and Libertarians together, and any number, third party, not Democrat or Republican, any number of third party that could form a coalition that could prevent either the Democrats or Republicans from taking the gavel in the House of Representatives, I promise you the Democrats and Republicans would band together in order to have a coalition government of Democrats and Republicans in order to lock out the third parties from being able to have any say in the agenda. I think we're past the point of no return. As sad as it is, I think we're actually circling the drain at this point, and I don't think that there's anything that can really save us from ourselves at this point.
I think the historical I understand. It's okay. I have something. I saw a great sketch earlier today on a video, and it gave me something to live for, which I'll talk about in a moment. It's space pants is what it is. But I do think that what's historical this year I think opens up the space for coalitions of alternative and particularly progressive candidates and parties is this unprecedented dissatisfaction with the candidate who is likely to win, and then on the other hand, in the other corner, this ridiculous meltdown, this total absurdist meltdown of the Republicans and the entire process in which their candidate was chosen and fielded, which reminds me that there was some interesting news about statues today, wasn't there, Gary?
Yes, I thought that was very interesting. Not suitable for work at all.
No.
What was it called? The Emperor Has No Balls, I think is what
they called it. Yeah, yeah. A series of naked Donald Trump statues in various cities, including New York City. And this is, of course, you said earlier before we started the show, you said this just made your day.
Oh yeah, that was I don't know if it was a tweet or if it was a quote that some news put out through the tweet, or Twitter or however you do it. I don't use it myself. I've heard of it. So but anyway, one of the parks people from New York City said, essentially I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the exact quote, but he said that, the Parks Department is against any unauthorized erections, no matter how small. And that, I think, just was perfect in relation to that one. And, I mean, and the thing is, seen it, go look at it. If you haven't seen it, go look at it, listeners, because it really is something you cannot unsee. And
you can't unsee, but the quote is great. The quote is great.
Yeah.
It's in New York City, and I can't think of a better statement of where that campaign is right now and where that candidate is right now in terms of public opinion, other than the fact that everyone is just openly mocking the guy. And, that's such a contrast to sort of how the campaign supposedly sees itself.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I've read, some, if you want to call it conspiracy theories, that obviously he is not running Michael Moore proclaims that he didn't want to be president. He's purposefully sabotaging his campaign because he never wanted the job in the first place. There's other people who are saying the only reason he's doing this is because he's hoping to create, you know, the Trump Fox News network, the Trump version of the Fox News network, all lies all the time. And that could very well be true. You know, it's just the biggest, most elaborate launch, business launch of all time. But you know, I think that at the end of the day, I mean, it's just turned out to be so dangerous in terms of what some of these people, you know, that follow him think that he will actually do. You know, like one person actually asked the question, you know, Donald Trump wants to build a wall, and one of Trump's followers said, you know, he'll make China pay for it. You know, oh, he'll make China. How do you do? Oh, you can make China pay for it. You can just do that. Well, what about Mexicans? I mean, the border's going to be with them. Yeah, the Mexicans, same thing. And somebody else will pay for it, not us. You know, it just comes down. I mean, and then there's this one guy just, you know, has a YouTube thing, and he has a gun and says, you know, shoot them all. That's, he actually said that. Mm-hmm. He said, shoot all these, you know, undocumented people and stuff like that. They actually. And you know, again, he's already put up that, you know, if I don't win, it's rigged. Well, what happens when these people think that, hey, it was rigged because he said it in, you know, it's almost like he knew, you know, it's almost like he knew he was going to lose, right?
Sure.
Well, he knew he was
going to
lose because it was rigged. It must have been rigged, right? And I'm
encouraging
there's a lot of people that might
intimidate
resort
voters
to violence.
At polls. You know, he's encouraging,
yeah.
he calls it election monitoring or whatever. It's going to be intimidation at polls. But I think it's interesting to me because 10 years ago, or around 10 years ago, when we, you know, a few years after we had gone into Iraq, you know, which was such an ill-advised thing to do and really was based on lies, I remember when I heard, you know, these quotes about neoconservatives saying, you know, kind of following Karl Rove and Roveism and sort of saying we live in this post-truth era. We live in an era where, you know, literal truth is no longer, you know, sort of the paradigm of political reality.
Fact-based.
Yeah, exactly. We're no longer in a fact-based world. And so in some ways, this is such a culmination of that. But it also distracts from the fact that the corporate duopoly that is in place, regardless of how, you know, I have no quarrel with people who, you know, want to make a qualitative pronouncement of one of those candidates over the other. And I think everyone knows what I'm talking about. And I don't want to get in a fight over that. But I then look at this other thing that we wanted to discuss a little bit tonight, which is Aetna and Aetna's threats to quit, to pull out of Obamacare, and doing so as retaliation for the Justice Department blocking their merger with Humana. And I look at that and I say, you know, this is the fruit of the poisonous tree of the corporate duopoly.
The fact
that we have a healthcare system where a major corporation, a private corporation's non-participation can screw up the entire machine. And that is a corporation that is not bound to act for the public interest. In fact, their corporate charter forbids them from acting in anyone's interest except their shareholders. And they are the ones that we have now entrusted. Corporations like that are now the ones that we have entrusted to promote the public good in terms of health care, because we didn't have a choice, because the choice was, you know, try to wrangle these private companies, or continue with the status quo of health care pre-ACA. Those were our only choices. Everything else got kicked off the table because of the corporate duopoly, because of these false choices. And so, you know, that to me, you know, this Aetna thing, I think is very much intimately tied to the frustration that more and more people have with that limited range of choices.
I don't disagree with you at all, but I happen to think that this is actually a good thing. I mean, as bad as it is that this corporation had that kind of market power to be able to at least feel that they could intimidate the Department of Justice in saying, we want a monopoly, and if you're going to stop us from a monopoly, we'll just take our marbles and go home. Mm-hmm. Well, two things. First of all, I love it when a corporation says, we'll just take our marbles and go home, because that's one thing about it. We don't need you. This is America. We'll just make more marbles. We don't need you, GE. We don't need you, Humana. We don't need you, Aetna. We don't need the sovereign state of ITT, going back to a very old book from the 70s. We don't need we don't need these corporations. I mean, as much as our system is set up for us to believe that we could not function without these things, keep in mind that our system today is built more along the lines of actually stifling competition against these companies than encouraging innovation through competition. Our current economic model is one that allows the banks to continue to defraud their customers, because that is their business model. And the DOJ actually says we can't stop them from doing this, because if we did, they wouldn't do it anymore. I mean, it's essentially, that's it. Their business model is basically we're in a post-capitalist environment right now. There is no innovation. There is no competition at the level where you can actually see innovation, because everything is built around not allowing innovation or competition that would interfere with incumbent companies and industries. And mm-hmm.
So the stifling of competition is sort of the culmination of that corporate control.
Exactly. That's what it was. But keep in mind that it was a two-edged sword, though. Because we the people have more or less decided, and in the political environment you can't say – there's no one out there that can say different. We decided that we want a healthcare system. We want people to be able to have healthcare. Now, Republicans can say we don't care if the veteran dies on the street anymore. You know, if he can't pay his premium, they let him die. And they'll shout that at their lungs at rallies. But they don't really care, because what have you done for me lately is basically their answer. But in this case, overwhelmingly, polls probably 60-70%. I don't have the statistic in front of me, but the vast majority of Americans want everyone to have access to health care, so that you don't have to go bankrupt if you get the flu or whatever. And just from a pragmatic perspective, the guy who is making $7.50 an hour, as wrong as that is, at Taco Bell, has to come in when he has the flu, because he can't afford, one, to go get the flu mm-hmm. shot, and two, he can't afford not to be there for his shift, and yet he's there making your burrito for you. And it is in everybody's best interest that everybody be able to be healthy, because it just makes sense. And Aetna coming in and saying, hey, you know what? We're not making the profit level we feel we are entitled to, and the government guaranteed us when they negotiated this the Obamacare. Since we're not getting what we thought out of it, we're just going to pull out of the market, which actually is one of those things. The pendulum's going to swing back so far that we the people are just going to say, Aetna, well, you know what? You better find a new line of work. Because nobody's going to be paying you premium anymore once Medicare for All is instituted, and I think mm-hmm. that's where we're going to see things go, because they're pulling out of something like 500 counties. When you pull out of 500 counties, you're pulling out of a huge swath of the market where you had monopoly power or a substantive amount of monopoly power, which means that the other guys who are in those markets won't be able to take up the slack, which means there will be very little option other than to open up Medicare for All. And I can tell you, if you're going to open up Medicare for All for people in Indiana, I want to crack at it too. Mm-hmm. And
well, that's
I would rather pay my premium. I'd rather pay my premium to the public option, because at least I know that if Medicare for All is what I'm getting, at least I know that 98% of my premium is going to provide care, not 30% mm-hmm. going to profit.
I agree. We will have to. So what you're kind of saying is, in the long run, this decision by Aetna and sort of the bad publicity that ensues is really just more of a death knell for corporate controlled healthcare. And we're going to have to see how this initiative in Colorado goes, because single payer is on the ballot this year in Colorado. And the health insurance lobbyists, including many, many, many mainstream Democrats, are lobbying so hard against this initiative. And, you know, they're basically red baiting the initiative. They're using the word socialism.
Well, they better hope Bernie doesn't come out. They better hope Bernie doesn't come out to Colorado.
Well, and he's endorsed the initiative. And it's going to be very interesting, especially given the progressive turnout that is being motivated by this presidential race, as lackluster as it is on so many levels. And so my point merely was that, you know, the episode with Aetna's taking its ball and going home is why talking about breaking from the stranglehold of this political binarism really matters. Talking about that matters.
Yeah.
I understand that it is difficult for a lot of people to talk about it in the context of this particular presidential race. But as I wrote in a column that I had that was published at Occupy.com about a week and a half ago, it's also, you know, this is also about much more than the presidential race. This is about many, many other races, and in those races, in those down ballot races, state races, Senate and House races, what you're seeing is a coalition emerging of people that are not really concerned about whether the DNC is happy with their candidate, and they're not really concerned about what party you belong to. They're really concerned about getting the right candidates in office and getting the right policies on the ground. And I think, you know, we'll see whether this initiative, it's a referendum, so we're going to see, you know, some very kind of stark and direct results of that referendum. We're going to see how single payer does in Colorado. It's one of many issues in this year's election that's not so much about the presidential race as it is about breaking the corporate stranglehold over America.
Well, you know, and I think we're actually on the threshold of that. When you look at the millennials, this is the first year where millennials outnumber baby boomers, millennials being 75 million, baby boomers being 74 million. So they actually do outnumber the now we'll see if they actually get out and vote, which I hope they do.
Mm-hmm.
Polls back during the primaries, Bernie Sanders, of course, being an unabashed socialist, being a very proud social Democrat. You know, most, and I think that this is probably what scares the socks off of most Republicans and conservatives, and even members of the Democratic part of the duopoly. That that 60% of millennials, when they said, you know, is socialism a bad thing? Most of them know we prefer it to capitalism, and that's kind of a very scary thing, because keep in mind that, you know, young people, I still hold many of the, of course, I've grown a bit older now, but you know. My first election my first presidential election was in 92, where I voted in 92 for Bill Clinton. And, mm-hmm. you know, I still hold many of those liberal leanings that I had. You know, this is 25 years later. I still hold many of those things. And that's what these kids today who are, you know, they're not ashamed to say, oh, yeah, I prefer, you know, I'm not they're not doing it in hushed tone saying, oh, yeah, you know, I prefer socialism, as we would have probably when I was a teenager. Say, you know, yeah.
No,
I,
they're
I,
much
I, you know,
more
I,
blatant.
But they're much more
that.
Open
that's
about
such
it.
Such a great
more...
way to close, too. You know, the kids today are ready to talk about the system in a way that we haven't been for decades in this country. And that's to me, that's a lot of fun. And it promises to make things very interesting in election years to come. So I don't know what we're going to be talking about next week, but I've enjoyed very much enjoyed our conversation this week. And everyone, watch the Space Pants sketch from Saturday Night Live on Hulu or YouTube or any other place that you can get to it. And we got about 30 seconds left.
Yeah, that's it. With 30 seconds left on the air tonight, I would like to thank everyone for listening. If you listened live, if you're listening to the podcast, of course, tune in next week as well. 9 p.m. Thursday nights, at least through November, through the November elections, the general election. So I'm going to say good night to everyone. Good night, Matt, and hope to see you here next week.
And no building statues of me anywhere.
With or without clothes.
Exactly. All right. Good night, everybody.